Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for Smart Money Happy Hour. Pull up a chair. It's the happy hour you wish your friends were having.
Mix two money experts with some hot takes and a splash of nostalgia, and you get me, George Camel.
And me, Rachel Cruz, talking unfiltered about what's going on in the world, pop culture, and how to afford a life you love.
We're talking money, celebrity budgets, and my budget for my two French bulldogs. It's a lot.
You'll hear it all on Smart Money Happy Hour. Listen on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new study from the global think tank, the World Resources Institute, claims that unless Americans cut back on beef consumption, the world is going to see massive food shortages by 2050. That's right, peasants. It's time to trade in your cheeseburger for a handful of crickets. Gross. I'll explain why this is nothing more than the same elitist population panic we've seen for over a century in tonight's Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. They want you to put down your hamburger, folks. They want you to, of course, stop using fossil fuels, ride bicycles, take shorter showers. You'll notice conservation is always at your cost, not theirs somehow. And it's not even really conservation, it's actually just the reduction in your standard of living under the rubric of saving the planet. The water that you use, the air that you breathe, the everything that you buy at the store that you need, all of that they want under their thumb. They want to control things. Well, my friends, here is a reality. They also want to control the burgers that you will eat. CNN headline here. To help save the planet, cut back to a hamburger and a half per week. First of all, I'm just going to throw this out there. Who eats a half a hamburger a week? As in either one or two, right? I'm not a lot of half hamburger guys running around. That's not really a thing, is it? Maybe you split one with your husband, your girlfriend, whatever. But anyway, here's from the CNN article. Americans will need to cut their average consumption of beef by about 40% and Europeans by 22%. For the world to continue to feed the 10 billion people expected to live on this planet in 2050, according to a new report from the World Resources Institute, goes on to say about 9.8 billion people will live on the planet by 2050. That's up from 7 billion people in 2010. Demand for food is projected to outpace population growth, increasing by more than 50% as people's incomes in the developing world are expected to increase, according to the report. Now, if you're wondering, where did this all come from? This notion that we're just going to overpopulate the earth. There'll be too many human beings. And then we'll all run out of food. And so there'll be massive reductions in population because we won't be able to actually handle it. We won't be able to feed the massive population on this planet. It's not a new idea. And it's one that returns in cycles over time. You could even go back to Thomas Malthus. He was an English cleric and a scholar. The turn of the 19th century, he wrote an influential essay that claimed that population growth would eventually outstrip food production, leading to mass starvation. Essentially, you're going to get to a point where there are so many people, you can't feed the people you have no matter what you do, and then you're going to have massive die-off until they get back down to the level that the Earth can actually sustain. This might sound right if you could predict the future, if you knew where technology was going, but you can't, and they didn't, and so it was really wrong. But this is a graph that shows Malthus's theory in action. Population rises exponentially and outstrips food production. You see, what he didn't think about was, maybe there will be more food production along with the more people because, one, we'll just get better at making food, and two, we'll just use more of the very abundant resources on this massive planet of ours to make more food, right? We make the food for the people. We're not trying to make food to store in massive silos that no one ever eats, right? We're trying to feed the population we have. Of course, there is some food storage, but you get what I'm saying. What was Malthus really all about? Well, his solution to this was essentially to kill off poor people. Yeah, sounds like a lib elite, doesn't he? We should facilitate the operations of nature in producing mortality. Instead of recommending cleanliness to the poor, we should encourage contrary habits. In our towns, we should make the streets narrower, crowd more people into the houses, and court the return of the plague. This English intellectual from just a few generations back, a very influential one at that, really believed that we should make life miserable for poor people so that they're living in filthy conditions, and maybe then the plague will come back and kill them off, and then we'll have enough food for the middle class and, more importantly, of course, the rich people to have. I mean, this is some crazy stuff, right? Except it hasn't gone away, folks. This is infused in the climate movement of today in so many ways. And the globalists, the global elite, the Davos set, they're always so worried about how we're going to feed the world and the drain on our resources and our climate. This is still going on. Now, you may have seen, for example, these Georgia Guidestones, the Stonehenge of Georgia, they call it. It's been around since 1979. There was an explosion, and then they tore it down. Someone tried to blow this thing up, and then it was so messed up they had to tear it down, I guess, because it was unsafe to be around. Now, look, don't destroy property. It's not nice. So that's bad. Not supposed to destroy property. That is a vandalism. But what was more interesting, I think, as part of this story was when people found out about, and maybe this, I mean, who knows what the real motivation was here, the 10 principles on the Georgia Guidestone. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite humanity with a living new language. Rule, passion, faith, tradition, all things. And it gets a little more boring below that. But be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. There's a kind of environmentalist radicalism underpinning all this. In fact, there's a Malthusian, go back to our buddy Thomas Malthus, Malthusian ethos at work here. 500 million people, perpetual balance with nature. Who says that's a perpetual balance? 500 million, but we're at 7 billion right now, right? So what am I missing here? So we're supposed to kill off 6.5 billion people? That's their idea? Or just watch them all die or something? What are they really saying here, folks? There is, as I've said, not only Malthusianism, but also a nihilism and a desire for totalitarian control that is infused in these environmentalist and sustainability movement. So much so that not only are they telling you to lay off the cheeseburgers, peasant, you don't need those cheeseburgers, looking a little tubby anyway, right? That's what they're telling you. But they also want you to really consider seriously, because, you know, got to be responsible stewards of the environment, that you should be eating bugs. This is from the World Economic Forum website. 5 reasons why eating insects could reduce climate change. Time magazine says they're healthy, they're sustainable. So why don't humans eat more bugs? CNN, the food that can feed and maybe save the planet, bugs. The Guardian, if we want to save the planet, the future of food is insects. You know, libs, I just want to say, why don't you choke down a mouthful of cockroach first? You know, let's see them do it. Instead of Bill Gates walking around with his giant belly and his billions of dollars trying to control the whole planet, telling everybody what they should be eating, I want to see Bill get on a treadmill, okay? I don't really need advice from these people about how to live my life, but it's not just advice, it's control that they want. They want to tell you what you can and can't do, and they come up with these extremely grandiose, convoluted, and honestly insane theories in order to justify this level of control. This is behind the Biden administration pushing for all of these reductions in climate, in emissions to protect the climate. They say climate is an existential threat. This is behind the Dutch farmers being told they can't actually farm food anymore, or at least not the way they're used to, because of climate emissions. This is all about control and adherence to a religion that is actually nihilism. It's not really a religion. It's the complete destruction of meaning of humanity and replacing it with the earth. That's what matters, not humanity. No, the earth is here for us. It's humanity's playground. Deal with it, libs. All right, President Biden continues to struggle with the out-of-control inflation situation. When we come back, Carol Markowitz is going to break that down for us. The raging dumpster fire that is the Biden economy. For a moment here, let's talk about protecting your online data. A lot of companies are going to say your privacy is guaranteed. We know that's not true, though. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com and use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more. Hold the line. President Biden is struggling to get a handle on soaring inflation, so much so that members of his own party seem to be viewing him as political kryptonite. Two Democratic candidates in Ohio even declining to share the stage with him at an event in Cleveland. In a recent op-ed, New York Post columnist Carol Markowitz says that Biden's economy is a flaming dumpster fire, writing, as the stock market continues to tank, inflation stays high, and people really feel the crunch. Many experts think a recession is on the horizon. The ship needs to be turned around, but the president first needs to recognize that he's set sail at all. Yep, I agree. She joins me on our discuss, Carol Markowitz. Good to see you, Carol. What's up?
Hi, Buck. Thanks for having me.
I got to say, it's always a bad sign when your side of things, as we're seeing with this White House, kind of changes the messaging. It feels like almost every day. Some days it's the economy's actually great, you know, you stupid peasants, stop complaining about gas. Other days it's, we've done an amazing job with the employment situation, so don't complain about how inflation's super high. And then it's Putin's price hike, maybe things aren't so great. You know, which one is it? I mean, I just wonder.
I mean, I'm still holding on to that 16 cents we saved last 4th of July. Mm. But yeah, you know, it's funny because when the Biden administration points to successes, like unemployment is very low, that is because of them. But when there's something wrong, like the gas prices are very high, that's because of somebody else. It's really quite convenient. And, you know, I think that, you know, what we have going on with this administration is that they don't know what they think. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And they get mocked by people like the Chinese state media. And it's scary to watch because the president is out to lunch and we have no idea what he's actually thinking.
And last night in Cleveland, for example, Biden told supporters that, you know, they're doing some work on inflation or something. Watch.
We got a long way to go because of inflation, because of the, I call it the Putin tax increase. The third reason I ran was to unify the country, de-unify it. That's been the harder part of it right now. No, I'm serious, because we've become so divided.
I mean, it's stunning. He really, it feels to me like the Biden White House now, the pitch is just to really dumb people or people who are living in total denial. I mean, this Putin price hike thing, no one really believes that's what's going on.
No, nobody believes that's what's going on because gas prices were going up before Putin invaded Ukraine. So, no, of course it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, the actual scary thing to me was when the White House Twitter account tweeted that the gas stations should be reducing the prices. And it's just like, if the president really believes that the individual gas stations are setting these prices, that's terrifying to me, Buck. I mean, it's just econ 101 that they don't seem to grasp. And then, the Chinese media weighing in on this and saying, well, look, the president finally believes that capitalism is, just a bad thing. And it's kind of scary to watch.
I mean, you mentioned Biden talking about gas stations and the messaging from this White House on the gas, beating up on gas stations. I mean, this should be like, you know, beating up on delis and bodegas for the price of eggs. It's like, well, if it's gone up everywhere else, guess what? It's going to go up with them too. But here he is. Here was his tweet. My message to the companies running gas stations and setting prices at the pump is simple. This is a time of war and global peril. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product and do it now. Does the president not understand that a business has to make a profit or else it goes out of business? Like, is he so stupid? And I wonder, because I've always thought Joe Biden was dumb. And actually, Democrats used to admit that he's just not a smart guy. He's never been a smart man. But he's kind of like an actor. He says the required lines. He looks the part. And so, you know, he's a senator from Delaware, right? Who cares? But maybe he is so stupid that he thinks a business can just charge what they actually pay for the product to consumers and still be a business.
I like that all these Twitter users started writing to like Lamborghini and Chanel and saying like, bring down the price of your product right now, you know, in a joking fashion. Tweet. I'm in for some Chanel, you know, price reductions if Joe Biden can make that happen for us. But yeah, it's as if he doesn't understand that oil is sold on the global market. It is not something that the individual gas station at the end of your block sets the price on. It is not something that they can control. And absolutely these, and you know, where were they when nobody was driving, when nobody was flying, and these gas stations were not making money? I mean, when the oil companies were not making money, it wasn't quite as much, quite a concern at that point. And it's just, again, it's like baffling to watch this administration make these calls and have these tweets, because it really shows an administration adrift and really with no bearings of what's actually happening.
Who, you know, it's funny. I've talked to Clay on this about radio a lot on our radio show. And it's, I do think it's instructive here, because as much as I disagreed with a lot of, I mean, pretty much all of Obama administration policy, but I thought they were wrong on things. There were some people in that administration at the senior levels in that White House who I would admit were smart. I think they were wrong, but they were smart and had some degree of competence and capability. I just think they were pursuing the wrong policies. In this Biden White House, I actually think it's really the B team. And I'm wondering, you know, do you see anybody here who you go, you know, that person would be, apart from whether you agree with them, could be in any presidential administration. Like, I feel like this is like the You're students right. who never do the reading for the class, and they're making all the decisions.
Do you mean our vice president here? Yeah, absolutely. I think that none of them have done the reading, and they always come off as sort of unprepared. Again, I think when you talk about the economy and you don't have any care about what the people are going through. I mean, we saw this a lot with Jen Psaki when she'd make comments like, oh, the tragedy of the treadmill, or other comments about just inflation or people not being able to get the items that they need. There's no connection to the American people where they understand our pain. I think you're absolutely right. With the Obama administration, at least you felt like when things were not going their way, that they were aware of it. This administration just pretends it's not happening.
Yeah, it seems delusional.
Right up, yeah.
Seems like they're really delusional. By the way, you mentioned this. The Chinese state-affiliated media saw the Biden tweet. The China Daily EU bureau chief tweeted back at the president, now U.S. president finally realized that capitalism is all about exploitation. He didn't believe this before. That's pretty awesome, I got to say.
It's just it's scary. I mean, this is what we're dealing with. And, you know, Trump got a lot of criticism when he was president about us being mocked on the world stage. I mean, this is worse than a lot of the mockery that the Trump administration received. I don't like the Chinese state media pointing out that our president doesn't seem to understand that capitalism is the best system to have ever existed. And, you know, it's scary to watch. And I am genuinely baffled by the behavior of this administration on the world stage.
Yara Markowitz, always on point. Thanks for joining us. The war in Ukraine is now at its fifth month, and the administration has begun to talk endgame. We'll have more on that with the senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, Bill Roggio, coming up. But I want to talk to you about protecting your most valuable asset, your home. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a recent story about an Arizona real estate agent who found out the home she lived in was for sale. Problem was, she wasn't actually selling her home. She was the victim of home title fraud, a devastating crime happening all over the country. According to the experts at Home Title Lock, the crime is incredibly profitable and hard to detect. An identity thief simply creates a fake title transfer for your home and refiles as the new owner. Then he can take out loans on your home or sell it. Typical identity theft services don't cover you, neither does homeowners insurance. Home Title Lock does. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone tampering with your home's title, they help shut it down and help get your home back in your name. So here's what you should do. Go to HomeTitleLock.com, read the testimonials from FBI agents and government officials. Then register your address to see if you're already a victim and don't even know it. When you protect your home, tell them Buck sent you to get 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com. Again, that's HomeTitleLock.com. Bill Roggio, up next. Stay with us. The war in Ukraine is now in its fifth month, and any hope of a quick resolution to the conflict has vanished. Last week, President Biden announced yet another $820 million aid package to the embattled nation, even as the administration itself is tempering expectations. Last week, U.S. Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines laid out three scenarios for how the conflict could end, some far less optimistic than the U.S. had initially hoped for. Here to bring some more insight is Senior Fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Bill Roggio. Bill, always good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
All right, so before we get to the scenarios laid out by DNI Haines, what are things looking like right now on the ground in Ukraine? Not a lot of reporting about it.
Yeah, there's the Russians took control of two cities, Lysychansk and Severodonetsk. So they've essentially consolidated control, full control of Luhansk province. That's one of the two provinces that make up the Donbas region. The other, Donetsk, that's the Russians are on the move there. Look, we keep hearing that, you know, the Russians don't have morale, they're losing equipment, they're losing men at a rapid pace, and yet they're still advancing on the ground. Today, they're advancing towards a small city called Siversk, and they're moving to look to take on the last two major cities in Donetsk province, whether the Ukrainians can hold them or not. I think after what we witnessed, the Russian offensives in the last 2 months, it's grinding, but it's effective. It's brutally effective. This is what I expected them to do in Kyiv, and they tried to do a lightning assault, and it seems the Russians have reorganized. The reporting has become from Ukraine on the Ukrainian side has become a lot more grim, a lot. It was very hopeful 2 months ago after the Battle of Kyiv, and now we're talking, you know, you have the National Director of intelligence talking about something we discussed that months ago about those three scenarios, and that two of them are not very good, Ukraine.
So now let's look at these scenarios that have been laid out in this, I think it was it a leaked assessment, Bill, that everyone's reporting on now, or at least some assessment the government has? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure how this came out. I thought it was public. But yes, basically, the director of national security, Avril Haines, said that, you know, look, there's three things, there's three outcomes here. The first could be the Russians can break through and take even more territory in Ukraine. And I think that's what we're seeing now. Everyone thought they were going to hold the Russians at Siversk. Once that front broke, the Russians advanced a pretty significant amount of territory. They advanced 10 miles in several days. And I know that might not seem like a lot, but in this type of war and on the battlefield, that's significant considering the fighting. So that's the first scenario, that the Russians make a game. The second scenario is that this thing turns into a World War I type stalemate. And then the third scenario is that the Ukrainians can drive out the Russians. I think that third scenario really has been shelved at this point, based on what U.S. officials are saying. I never thought that that was very realistic, given the Russian military capabilities. And I think we're seeing the first and second scenarios being more likely. The Ukrainians are taking significant losses, 100 to 200 soldiers a day killed, up to 500 wounded. These are the Ukrainians' best troops, and they're giving up ground and taking significant casualties. I don't think they're fighting very smart. And that's why that first option, the Russian breakthrough, the Russian takeover of significant territory, this is the one, again, we were warning about this, 1 to 2 months ago, Buck, and people were just poo-pooing this as being impossible, but now it is a possibility.
And in what ways are the Ukrainians most mismatched here militarily? Early on, there was a lot of talk about airstrikes and artillery range. Is that still, are those still the primary areas where the Ukrainians are, you know, having a hard time even withstanding this Russian offensive? And basically, given that they're fighting on their home turf, we're giving them a lot, they've got a lot of guns, right? They've got a lot of shoulder-fired missiles, and they've been getting military support from not just America, but many countries. How are the Russians able to continue to grind on and take more territory? Where is the mismatch?
The mismatch primarily is on artillery, first and foremost, as you mentioned, and secondary in the air. The Russians have negated the Ukrainian in the air, the Ukrainians' use of UAVs. That was very effective in the beginning. But now the Russians have been countering this using their air defense more effectively. But the Ukrainians are saying they're outmatched by 10 to 15 to 1, depending on what part of the front, in artillery. Now, the U.S. is supplying artillery systems, but the problems are is that some of these artillery systems aren't compatible with what the Ukrainians use, the old Soviet weapons systems. They're having supply issues. The Russians are firing at least 10 to 1 shells. So the Ukrainians are starting to have problems with effective combat units. They're losing some of their best fighters, some of their best soldiers are starting to get ground down. I'm starting to see reports of units taking 40, 50, 60 to 80% casualties. That is not sustainable. These are the casualties that people were saying the Russians were taking at the beginning. The Ukrainians are now starting to take these casualties. When you put all this together, this is why that collapse scenario. And look, I don't think the Russians can advance all the way to the border, west to the border of Poland, but they could advance to the Dnipro River, which I think was their initial goal of taking Kiev and taking all the territory east of the Dnipro River. I think this is a possibility now, something that that we have to consider. And
so you think they may, because I've been saying this since February, that they're just going to cut the country in half and take the eastern part of it and just say, you guys can have the rest. Do you think that's what they're heading toward?
Yeah, absolutely, Buck. That's what I felt as well. They would leave a rump Ukrainian state that is weakened, that is divided, and the Russians can have, have a client state on, west or east of the Dnipro River. I think I always think that was the goal. I don't think they felt that they could fully occupy Ukraine.
And what is the Biden administration doing in the background here to try to bring this conflict? Because it feels like right now it just goes on until the Russians get what they want. I mean, is the reason that we don't hear more about a possible solution to this through diplomacy that the Russians have now decided they're not stopping no matter what until they get that bisected Ukraine? I mean, do we know what Putin stated what his goal is? And do we know what Biden is offering on behalf of the Western countries aligned as Ukraine's allies here to try to stop the conflict now?
Yeah, President Biden and other Western leaders have said this is a decision the Ukrainians must make. But in the background, I think they are trying to push for a solution. But the problem is the Russians don't want a political solution. They want to, I believe, to split the state. They said they want to take control of the Donbas, liberate those areas, get rid of the Nazi elements and demilitarize the Ukrainians. That would be leaving a rump state, as we talked about earlier. But the Ukrainians themselves are saying they're going to fight until they drive the Russians out of all of Ukraine. So both sides are nowhere near considering negotiating. And I wouldn't trust the Russians to negotiate either. This is a situation. This is why I think unless the Russians achieve a dramatic breakthrough and are able to take significant amount of territory, forcing the Ukrainians leaving them with no choice but to cede the ground, I think this could be either a lengthy conflict or prolonged conflict. I just don't see the Ukrainians being able to drive the Russians out, not in the near to midterm.
I mean, if you had to make an assessment, is this war still going on a year from now?
I think it may be. Yes, I think if I had to make an assessment, unless there is a significant Russian breakthrough and a collapse, I think given what we witnessed this last 5 months, that it's very likely that this war will be grinding on for the next year. And look, Europe and even here in the United States, we're starting to see Ukraine fatigue, and that plays a role into this as well. It could either extend this war or it could bring it to a quick close if the Western countries decide to cut down or even stop providing aid to Ukraine.
Bill, thanks for being with us, man. Good to see you.
Always a pleasure, Buck. Have a great one.
Senator Elizabeth Warren is taking aim at crisis pregnancy centers, claiming that they're used to trick women into not getting abortions. I mean, she actually said that. We'll have more on this with the host of Counterculture on the Epoch Times, Danielle D'Souza, in a moment. As we've reported on this program before, pro-life establishments around the country, including churches and crisis pregnancy centers, are being vandalized all over the United States, and it seems nobody's being held accountable for it. According to a report in the Daily Signal, 6 days after the FBI announced a formal investigation into a series of attacks against churches and pro-life organizations, the agency seems to be following through but apparently has made no arrests. If that wasn't enough, Senator Elizabeth Warren is now attacking crisis pregnancy centers as well, claiming they're fooling pregnant women into not getting abortion. Seriously, saying that. Joining me now to discuss this, Danielle D'Souza, host of Counterculture with Danielle D'Souza. Danielle, good to see you.
Hi, Buck. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with this soundbite of Elizabeth Warren that there are the things that I would talk about that are differences of politics, and then there are things that seem like differences of whether a person understands and lives with basic morality and has a soul. And this, for me, finds itself more in the second category. Here's Elizabeth Warren saying that, first of all, she thinks all crisis pregnancy centers should be shut down in her state of Massachusetts. And why? Watch.
Here in Massachusetts, these so-called crisis pregnancy centers outnumber genuine abortion clinics by 3 to 1. They are giving it over to people who wish them harm. And that has to stop. We need to put a stop to that in Massachusetts right now.
People, I mean, there's so much there. People who wish them harm, she says, of crisis pregnancy centers that do things like give counseling, get baby formula, baby clothes, bring together family members to teach them about how to be helpful with the baby. I mean, that wishes them harm, apparently.
Exactly. I mean, these crisis pregnancy centers actually give people oftentimes free medical care, free ultrasounds, free checkups. But yet the people who wish them harm aren't the crisis pregnancy centers. It's actually people like Elizabeth Warren and Planned Parenthood that not only wish the baby harm, of course, but actually the woman harm. They oftentimes don't want her to know what is happening in the pregnancy. They don't want her to know what's happening in the womb. And so this bait and switch she's talking about isn't what the crisis pregnancy centers are doing. It's what Planned Parenthood does. They basically say, we're all about parenthood. We're all about these other services. When in reality, they use that to bring women in and then actually give them abortions. So they're the ones who are pulling this bait and switch tactic and are also using this to then harm the same women.
Yes, and it also is fascinating because for years, Danielle, we know that the Planned Parenthood talking point has been that abortions are only 3% of the services they provide. And they'll often say, well, what about, you know, people say, what about mammograms? It turns out Planned Parenthood doesn't do mammograms. They can suggest essentially to somebody where to go to get a mammogram. But now that abortion isn't getting the same kind of federal funding and abortion isn't getting the same kind of legal support from the make-believe constitutional right, if only 3% of your activities as a business involve something, why are Planned Parenthood's closing down?
You know, I think that's a really good point. Planned Parenthoods have been closing down. They've been dropping like flies all over the country. We've even seen these abortion bans coming into place in many states. And you know, the left keeps saying things like, oh, abortion is so popular, Roe v. Wade is so popular. Well, actually, it's not popular. That's why so many of these states want restrictions. And that's why so many of these states then are closing down these Planned Parenthoods, because Planned Parenthood has nothing to offer these women if not abortion. That was their primary service. That was their main service. And anything that they would add to that was really just an add-on service. So Planned Parenthood closing is actually a good thing. And it'll be great if we actually don't send federal funding to Planned Parenthood, but perhaps instead send it to some crisis pregnancy centers that actually help women's health.
And there's a surge in these companies, by the way, that we've all seen that are touting their abortion travel benefits, which is remarkable when you find out, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods, for example, saying, don't worry, we'll give you thousands of dollars to travel to go get an abortion. Some people pointed out also to make everyone really, apart from, of course, the morality of abortion itself, it should make people really uncomfortable that it seems that these companies are much faster to talk about how much they want to help people get abortions than they are to help with maternity leave and provide assistance for actual motherhood. But here's a Fox 40 headline. If you use your company's abortion travel benefits, will your boss find out? There are so many of these companies that are talking about their abortion travel benefits. I think that they may also start to realize, one, it seems strange that they're so dedicated toward this, especially in companies that aren't necessarily thought of as woke, but also if they're going to be paying people to travel across state lines, it's kind of like they're asking for this to be handled at the federal level by Congress, which may have different implications than they think it will.
Right. And, you know, you brought up this question of, will your employer know whether or not you use these funds to travel to get an abortion? Well, why is it that they're saying, oh, no, that's your right to privacy. We don't need to know that. Here's the money. You're just going to get reimbursed for this. But yet they want to know how many shots you've gotten, whether you've gotten a vaccine. They want to know all these other things about your personal health, but yet they don't want to know about this. And as you mentioned, they do want these women to get abortions because they don't want to have to pay for maternity leave. They don't want women to actually have families, have a life outside of work. They basically want them to grow up and live in cubicles their whole lives so that that kind of provides their meaning in life. Basically, work is the only thing that they care about. And yet these companies know that this is actually quite harmful to women. Just sending them across state lines, they're just going to fly them to places like New York to get abortions there. I mean, This is something that I think we thought of before this happened, you know, this abortion tourism, the idea of having like a Disneyland being like an abortion clinic and people go there and they're flown there on a trip. It really is just a new concept, I think.
Here's a guy, Harvey Cotton from the Ropes and Gray law firm that our team pulled this from, talking about how the abortion benefits will work. This guy stated, just like your employer doesn't know if you're going to the doctor for treatment of any other medical condition, they wouldn't be able to find out what you've been reimbursed for travel to seek an abortion in a state where it's legal. That's why having this benefit work through the medical plan is so important. This could turn into a bit of a fight, I think, as well over, is this a mandatory benefit now, right? And remember, because of Obamacare, we've all gotten used to this very heavy-handed federal, well, this must be, you know, covered by all plans. Are all plans all across the country supposed to cover abortion, even though abortion is illegal in some states?
Yeah, well, some states are even passing laws saying that you can't actually help someone else obtain an abortion, like Texas. So I don't know where that's going to go as far as the legal ramifications of that. But no, I mean, I think this idea of making it so that, you know, this is now required to be part of insurance and so on, that's almost another thing that then we have to deal with trying to get rid of. But I think if that happened, I don't think it would be upheld at all.
Danielle, always appreciate the perspective. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
An Arizona congressional candidate recently released an ad in which he takes on the Ku Klux Klan with an AR-15. You've got to see this. We've got video for you in Quick Hits. Stay with us. Arizona congressional candidate Jerome Davis shows why he believes he needs a 30-round magazine. And California Governor Gavin Newsom is under fire for yet another striking piece of hypocrisy. We have those stories in Quick Hits. Let's get right to it. Now, usually congressional ads are pretty boring. Usually congressional ads, you watch them and you go, come on, what's this really supposed to do? Who's going to care about this one? And you get into the, oh, did this guy really say this? Or did he really stand, or the gal, you know, stand for that? Whatever, right? Sometimes, though, the ad is so creative that it becomes a bit of a cultural moment, a meme, if you will, and goes viral, and a lot of people see it. And I think that may be the case here with Jerome Davis. He's running for Congress in Arizona, and he is clearly a supporter of the Second Amendment. And as you know, there's this ongoing debate about how, because gun grabbers, leftists, Democrats, they want to tell you you can't have. Now, I don't think the criminals care what we say about magazine limitations, of course, but the law-abiding are told you can't have a 10-round magazine or a 15 or a 30-round magazine. You can only have a 5-round magazine. How long before they say you can only have a one-at-a-time, a one-at-a-time breech-loading rifle of some kind? I mean, it's ridiculous, right? I mean, this is where we are. Flintlock pistols only. This is crazy. Jerome Davis, though, made this ad. He's running for Congress, and he says, look, you might need 30 rounds because of a situation like this.
Democrats like to say that no one needs an AR-15 for self-defense, that no one could possibly need all 30 rounds. But when this rifle is the only thing standing between your family and a dozen angry Democrats in Klan hoods, you just might need that semi-automatic and all 30 rounds.
There you have it, right? There was the 4th of July weekend just happened, and there was a lot of attention, of course, on the mass shooting that occurred in Highland Park, and then also the shootings that occurred in other major cities. So those were the biggest news stories, and rightly so. But if you see some of the stuff that was going on with these Independence Day celebration, or over the weekend of Independence Day, I should say, that this stuff has nothing to do with Independence Day. This is just people taking an opportunity to blow things up and create mayhem and get away with bad behavior. Here is a group of youths in Minneapolis who just drove around attacking people with fireworks on the street. I mean, one woman was walking a dog. She was targeted directly. Watch this.
That's my slime!
And there's Gavin Newsom, vacationing in Montana. A new controversy is arising from Governor Gavin Newsom's holiday trip with his family. Newsom is on vacation in Montana, according to Cal Matters. Montana is one of 22 states California has banned state-funded travel to because of anti-LGBTQ policies. So let's be clear. Gavin Newsom, in an act of typical lib virtue signaling, says no one is allowed to go to Montana because he says it's anti-LGBTQ. And by the way, let's be clear, it's LGBTQIA+ for Gavin Newsom's purposes and everyone else's. Let's be very clear on that one. Can't leave out the extra letters because that would be non-inclusive. Gavin Newsom, though, traveled to Montana and he doesn't want state employees to go there. So it's good for Gavin Newsom on vacation. That's cool. But it's not okay for state employees to go there for any reason because it's so bigoted. The whole state of Montana. Punish the whole state. And 22 states, California says you can't have state-funded travel to. California, lib insanity, all concentrated in that one state. It's not good. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shield Tide.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and build specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's t2t.org.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.